I'm Amber Tresca, and this is About IBD. I'm a medical writer and patient educator who lives with a J-pouch due to ulcerative colitis. It's my mission to educate people living with Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis about their disease and to bring awareness to the patient journey. Welcome to episode 149. March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. People with IBD and anyone over the age of 45 need to have regular screening to detect and prevent colon and rectal cancer. There are also several other types of conditions that can put people at higher risk for colorectal cancers. That can mean having screenings earlier or more frequently. My guest is Dan Drydock Shockley. Dan lives with a permanent ostomy due to attenuated familial adenomatous polyposis, or AFAP. This is a genetic condition that causes the growth of polyps, which can become cancerous. These polyps grow in the colon, but they can also appear in other organs in the body as well. I've followed Dan for several years, watching how he raises awareness of colorectal cancer, ostomies, and genetic cancers. Dan tells me about his diagnosis, how he went about preparing for ostomy surgery, and some of his activism wins. Plus, he lets me know what inspires him to always forge ahead with a purpose. Dan, thank you so much for coming on About IBD.
Amber, thank you very much. Honored for the opportunity to share my journey on your podcast.
Oh, it's my pleasure. As I told you before, you've been on my short list for a long time now that I've wanted to speak to you. So I'm glad that we could make this work. And I wonder first if you would begin by introducing yourself a little bit so that the listeners understand who you are and where you're coming from.
Oh, thank you very much. I'd be honored. Yeah, my name is Dan Drydock Shockley. I'm a retired Navy veteran of Operation Desert Storm, Operations Enduring and Iraqi Freedom. And 12 years ago, I was diagnosed with a hereditary colon cancer syndrome known as attenuated FAP, which is a autosomal dominant germline mutation. I know that's a lot to digest, but I can explain later. And as a result of my diagnosis, I underwent successful ostomy surgery. So I have a permanent ileostomy and ambassador internationally for the importance of early detection and hoping to help silence the stigma often associated with not just getting a colonoscopy, but with being an ostomy.
Dan, I love that. And of course, those are all of the reasons why we're talking today. But I want to start first with your time in the Navy, because I'm sure you have so many stories to tell from your time in the Navy. But start off with letting me know where you enlisted, when you enlisted, and then where you served.
Absolutely. Yeah, I enlisted in Chicago, and December of 81, I reported to a boot camp in San Diego, and that started my journey, and I was out there for 9 months, and I went to my first ship, which was stationed on Charleston, South Carolina, and I served on board. The USS Petrel was a submarine rescue ship, and we spent a lot of time down in the Caribbean. Lots of neat port visits down there, lots of operational things, operational missions we had. It was amazing. My first tour, I learned so much, and that actually started my journey of overcoming adversity. I ended up serving on active duty for 22 years. I was assigned during my career to 7 different ships, different home ports. And 3 of those ships were been deployed to the Persian Gulf while I'd been on board. I ended my career on a little island off the coast of Saudi Arabia in direct support when we kicked off Operation Enduring and Operation Iraqi Freedom. So I was on the ground in Bahrain, September 23rd of 2001 to September 4th of 2003. And, just had an amazing career, lots of experience, learned a lot from my comrades, Marines especially. Their mantra is adapt, improvise, and overcome. And I took that to heart once I was diagnosed with my mutation. Plan for the worst, hope for the best. There's been a lot of nights when I was in the Persian Gulf on those ships that you'd sleep with one eye open because you just don't know. And so once again, that little bit of experience really helped me with my mindset once I was diagnosed with this mutation to, plan for the worst, hope for the best. My mindset is I tend not to think about things I'm unable to control, such as medical issues. What I can control is my positive attitude. And after this long on God's green earth, my positive attitude has brought me this far. Why change now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for all of that. And that's, you know, one of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you as well, is to understand how you overcame, but you adapted to learn to live with your diagnosis. And so, but I wonder if you would first explain a little bit about this, because it is a rare condition, attenuated FAP. But I'm wondering if you would explain a little bit about FAP and when and how you were diagnosed.
Absolutely. Now, it's important to note, I'm not a medical professional. I'm just a very attentive patient. And I had my first colonoscopy at 51 years old. I was in Hawaii at the time. That's where I resided. And the VA healthcare system over there took care of me. And leading up until the colonoscopy, I felt fine, you know, asymptomatic. Once again, no family history. So I had the colonoscopy. When I woke up, my doctor, he was standing there, and he had photographs that he took of the colonoscopy. He had said he found 100 polyps embedded throughout my colon, rectum, and anus. And one of those polyps was creating an 80% blockage in my ascending colon. Now, I was like, well, doc, I don't understand what this is all about, because I feel fine. And at the time, I had 2 full-time jobs. And I said, well, I'm going about my daily activities. I mean, I don't understand what this is all about. He goes, well, I'm going to have to send you over to a certified genetic counselor at Tripler Army Medical Center. The VA Medical Center is on the same campus as Tripler. And Tripler is a huge, it's a flagship for the military, Department of Defense in the Pacific Theater. This is the hospital that all these troops and sailors get sent to from Japan, Singapore, Okinawa, Guam. They all, if they need anything, they're going to come to Tripler, because that's how good this hospital is. So I had an appointment a couple days later to see the certified genetic counselor. She sat me down and said, well, we think you have FAP. The mutation is actually adenomatose polyposis coli. APC is a mutation, okay? It's in the 22nd chromosome. Now, FAP would be an earlier onset below 49. Attenuated FAP has a later onset, 50 to 55. Now, it's important to note, attenuated FAP was discovered by the late Dr. Henry T. Lynch. So for those who are familiar with Lynch syndrome, well, Dr. Henry T. Lynch, this Lynch syndrome was named after him, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, he's also credited with the discovery of attenuated FAP and his research between 1984 and 1992. Now, I had to go through germline DNA testing. Now, the results had to be sent, the samples had to be sent to a molecular oncology lab in Pasadena, California. That's the closest lab to Tripler that would facilitate this particular test. And it took 6 weeks to get the results back, because they had to do so many tests on my sample. So in the meantime, I was sitting down with my genetic counselor. I had an open door with her. Now, I had the audience of the chief colorectal surgeon, as well as the chief of surgery at Tripler. So I had open communication with all three of these, as well as my GI doctor, to communicate with them any questions I had. So I had lots of questions, and they had information for me to read about the mutation. So I had 6 weeks to mentally prepare myself. Now, my military experience, I went into battle mode, but battle mode in a positive way, because I'm ready to take this head on. So I broke down the reading into 3 phases. I wanted to learn about the mutation as much as I could before the results came back. And I wanted to also learn about the particular surgery where they'd have to remove my colon, rectum, and anus and be outfitted with a permanent ileostomy. Then I wanted to read about what it's like to be an ostomate for the rest of my life. Now, theory is one thing. Mm-hmm. Practical application is another thing. So I'm on the other side of the table on my medical team, and I'm taking all this in. And the results came in, and I got called into see the genetic counselor, my colorectal surgeon. And they said, well, Daniel, the results came in, and you actually have the APC mutation, so therefore you've been diagnosed with attenuated FAP because you're 51 years old and you're right in that window. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, he goes, well, of those 100 polyps, there's a 100% chance that any of those polyps can turn into hereditary colon cancer. So it's in your best interest and best practice of medicine to have your colon, rectum, and anus removed. You don't have to have it, but you need it because the longer you wait, you're setting yourself up for some hard times. Mm-hmm. I looked at my doctor and I said, Doc, I've already read about this. I'm ready. I want the surgery. He goes, Daniel, that's what I thought you'd say. I've already scheduled your surgery. It's 2 weeks from today. And I had the surgery. I was preparing myself. When I woke up in the recovery room after this 6-hour surgery, and the first thing I said was, did Doc Gagliano find everything he was looking for? And then he came in and talked to me, and he says, well, I feel confident that we have everything. However, we're going to have the biopsy from the colon in 8 days. And so I was in the hospital for a total of 12 days. The results came in from the pathology, and one polyp that was causing an 80% blockage in your ascending colon was an 8-centimeter tumor listed as high-grade dysplasia. Now, in my book, that's as close to stage zero as you can get.
Yeah.
Fortunately, my colorectal surgeon was able to get all the associated lymph nodes, and that's where we're at. Mm-hmm.
Did they ever think that it could also be something else, or were you always operating? Because it seems to me you had more than 100 polyps. No matter what it was, you were probably going to have the colectomy. Is that accurate?
Yeah. The mutation, it's a germline mutation. So once they did the DNA test, they confirmed that I had the mutation, APC. That was it. That's my ticket now. And I'm sailing that course now because... Now, keep in mind about Dr. Lynch. Mm-hmm. Well, my genetic counselor and colorectal surgeon were colleagues of Dr. Lynch. At that time, he was 86 years old. He was, among other things, the director of preventative medicine at Creighton University, Omaha, Nebraska. So little did I know that my genetic counselor and colorectal surgeon had been communicating with Dr. Lynch. So the interesting part is 7 months after my surgery, guess who shows up in Hawaii to do academic lectures? Dr. Lynch. Mm-hmm. So I got invited by my genetic counselor to attend one of his lectures at the University of Hawaii Cancer Center. And my genetic counselor introduced me to Dr. Lynch before one of his lectures. And then after the lecture, we had lunch, and there was a group of 6 of us from Tripwire. And then we sat down for an hour and 50 minutes, and I got to talk to Dr. Lynch. I had my genetic, my DNA test results with me, my discharge summary from the hospital. And then he went on to say that during this conversation that I had a unique case of AFAP, and he considered me a colleague. We stayed in touch through the years. Now, when you have the APC mutation, it's important that the individual goes through routine endoscopic procedures. So I was having endoscopic procedures every year up until 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Now, what the mutation will do, it will and has manifested in other organs. So it's already, the polyps in my stomach are too numerous to count. Mm-hmm. I'm asymptomatic. I just continue to go through my endoscopic procedures. Now the reason I ended up in California is because one of those endoscopic procedures is called a single or a double balloon enteroscopy, where that scope actually has to get into your small intestine. Mm-hmm. Well, there's no facility in Hawaii that's accredited to have that procedure, that particular scope performed. So I was being flown to San Jose to go to Palo Alto VA hospital, and the director of the GI clinic was performing the scopes. They actually exhausted all their scopes. I think I went through four. The first time I was out there in 2014, I ended up going through 4 different scopes.
Yeah.
So he said, okay, we'll come back in 2 years. Now, I was still having the EGD and the side view scope performed in Hawaii. However, whenever I needed the single double balloon, that would be done at Palo Alto. And I decided to go ahead and move to California to be closer to Palo Alto because I knew from the communication I had with Dr. Lynch, the older I get, the higher percentage that this mutation could reach my pancreas. So 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, it was a 3-centimeter adenoma discovered in my jejunum, the very beginning of the small intestine. And based on that, my GI doctor there, the director of the clinic at Palo Alto, he recommended I consider surgery. Now, I was thinking it was a Whipple procedure. Well, in the last 25 years, there's a newer technology called a pancreas sparing duodenectomy resection. I know it's a lot to digest. You're basically going to take out about 60 centimeters at the beginning of your small intestine, redo the bile ducts to your pancreas, and then remove your gallbladder. So I was referred to one of the leading pancreatic cancer surgeons at Stanford. Now, I didn't have pancreatic cancer. However, if I would have left that adenoma continue to manifest, that's the road I'd be down right now. So I got referred to Stanford. We had the surgery and smooth sailing ever since. And I go back now every 2 years for an EGD and a single bone enteroscopy. We don't have to do the side view scopes anymore because I don't have the jejunal. And little did I know, the director of the GI clinic was faculty at Stanford. He's on loan to the VA. So the surgeon he referred me to, they're colleagues, they're faculty at Stanford. So no pun intended, no, they know me inside and out.
Yeah, 100%. After the break, how Dan prepared while waiting for his biopsy results. I want to go back to your initial diagnosis, and you broke it down as to how you thought about it, and you kind of went about it in a sort of methodical way to learn about what might happen to you and so that you could prepare. But I want to understand how that affected you, maybe more emotionally, this diagnosis, and then understanding what the treatment was. I'm assuming that you've been pretty healthy aside from, I know we talked about you'd had an appendectomy some years prior. But, you know, what did that feel like? And then what would be your advice for anyone that comes up against this, a diagnosis like this, that literally comes out of the blue?
Yeah, comes out of the blue. Absolutely. Well, the important thing is everybody is going to be different based on their life's experiences up to that point. You know, when they get a diagnosis of any type, I'm open-minded. You know, I ask a lot of questions and I like to do a lot of my own research from credible sources, so I can better prepare myself. It's all about the mental part, mental preparation. It's like when I got deployed to the Persian Gulf. We have no idea what it's like until you get there. You can read all you want about it and be prepared. You know, I would rather, you know, like I said, plan for the worst and hope for the best. So that's my approach because of my military experience. Everywhere that I went, I was always, what's the phrase we use? Ever vigilant, okay? So that's part of the reason that I embraced this diagnosis from the onset, is I wanted to learn as much as I could about it. And the more that I read, the more I realized that there's not that much information about it. And keep in mind that attenuated FAP is listed as a rare disease. It's a subvariant of FAP. So Dr. Lynch has shared with me that this mutation, attenuated FAP, is estimated to impact less than 0.03% of the global population. There's no statistics on it. You'll hear about FAP a lot more than you'll hear about attenuated FAP. FAP will impact approximately 1% of the global population. That's what the communication I had with Dr. Lynch. Now, keep in mind, he passed away June 2nd of 2019 on, I believe it was either National or World Cancer Day, okay? Dr. Lynch is the founding father of hereditary cancer research. Okay, he's the world-renowned leader. He passes away at 91 and a half years old on World Cancer Day. So my purpose is to share my journey on the importance of early detection, to carry the torch for Dr. Lynch and in hopes of saving lives. You know, I try to be a source of inspiration and encouragement for those who hear about me or read about my journey. And I also want to educate the medical students because rare diseases are not part of the curriculum for mm-hmm. medical students. So I've been, I've had the opportunity to be a live case presentation many times virtually, and then a lot of times in person for medical students, GI students, genetic counselors, and this is my way of giving back to the medical students, medical professionals, and then, like I said, be a source of inspiration for the masses, you know, that hear about my journey.
Right. And as you said, FAP is still not well known. And there's so much misinformation and stigma around ostomies. And so you've taken it on to help try to help the general public as well as medical professionals better understand these conditions. And you've brought so much to your activism in terms of colorectal cancer awareness and ostomy awareness. And so I want to hear about some of the highlights of this journey and some of the things that, because you have spearheaded some initiatives. Can you tell me about some of those things?
Oh, wow. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, when I was in Hawaii, I had the audience of the governor at the time, David Ige, for Ostomy Awareness Day, which is the first Saturday of every October, and then the month of March being Colon Cancer Awareness Month. So I had the audience of the governor on behalf of the United Ostomy Associations of America. I had requested he present a request, sponsor my proclamation request, as well as on behalf of the Fight CRC organization for March being Colon Cancer Awareness Month. So I had the audience with him several times before I left in 2016. And then since I've been in California, I had my mayor, they present proclamations to me for each campaign. And last summer, I reached out to the Senator Roger Nilo. I reside in his district, and I asked him if he'd be interested in sponsoring a commemorative message about my Ostomy Awareness Day campaign here in California. He said, I will not only sponsor this, I'm going to author a Senate concurrent resolution designating last year, October 7th, as Ostomy Awareness Day in the state of California. And that request was submitted on the 14th of August. I was invited to the state capitol and I sat up in the gallery. He introduced the Senate concurrent resolution on the Senate floor up for vote, and it passed 37-0. Then I was informed that this is the first measure of its kind in the state of California. So 2 weeks later, I was invited to his office and he presented the framed resolution to me and my wife. And I figured, well, you know, I'm testing the waters. So I reached out to his staff a couple weeks later and I asked him, would you be interested in sponsoring a Senate concurrent resolution designated March as CRC Awareness Month in the state of California? And they said, sure, reach out to us after the new year. So I did. And a week ago, Monday, I was invited to the state capitol, sat up in the gallery again with some colleagues from the area. And he introduced the measure and it passed unanimously 34-0. And then we went down to the second floor of the capitol and got to meet Senator Nilo, when my colleagues were with us, and we had photos taken. And I'll be waiting, be about another week or so, I'll be called to go to his office to get that frame resolution. While I was talking to him after the event, I reminded him that I'm going to be circling back about Ostomy Awareness Day. I said, every third year is World Ostomy Day. He goes, okay, I'll do it again. So now we're gearing up for that. Now that's going to be October 5th of this year's World Ostomy Day. Now we're going to have an event in Sacramento at the Mather VA Medical Center. My wound nurse, who's now retired from the VA, she's been with me with these presentations, as well as when my mayor here in the city of Galt presents his proclamation to us. She's been there. And the Sacramento County Board of Supervisors, they presented their Ostomy Awareness Day resolution to me last September, the end of September. So All I can do is just continue to ask, you know, for support from my legislative member. In this case, Senator Roger Neal has been very receptive to it, and he's such a down-to-earth guy, and I hope we'll have many more opportunities in the coming campaigns. But that's been the highlight so far. But it's been an incredible journey all along the way.
Yeah, I mean, that's just incredible. And it must help so many people in your state and then also beyond your state feel seen and heard and understood to have these proclamations. And then also to, have the World Ostomy Day events that are coming up. That's going to be so exciting, and it's going to help so many people. So thank you so much for all that work. But Dan, where did the dry dock come from?
Oh, great question. Okay, so Dan Dry Dock, the impetus of Dry Dock. In 2019, I was playing for the Central Valley Vintage Baseball Club here in the Sacramento area. We play by the 1863 rules of baseball. No gloves. It's all underhand pitching. And their one rule was, if the ball bounces, you catch it on a hop, it's still considered an out. Mm-hmm. They don't count balls and strikes, and you can't overrun first base. Those are among some of the rules. And you wear all the attire that they'd wear from back in the day. Farmers coming from the fields. So I started playing for them. Now, when I started, I played 3 games with them. And then everything else changed, the first game I showed up, I didn't expect to play. And they asked what position. I said, well, I play first base. I said, okay. And they had a second baseman. His name was Dan. So here you got mm-hmm. first base and second base, both Dan. And the other Dan was an Army, Air Force vet. Mm-hmm. So I went to the coach and I said, well, this is going to get kind of interesting because first and second base were both named Dan. He goes, well, what we do is we try to encourage our players to have a vintage themed nickname. I said, okay. And I said, well, just call me Dry Dock. And he goes, okay. And I said, I'll tell you later. And it just off the top of my head. Well, okay. So vintage 1863, okay. Mm-hmm. Civil War era. Abraham Lincoln's president. My home of record is Illinois, the land of Lincoln. One of my deployments to the Persian Gulf was on the USS Abraham Lincoln. Mm. Guess where we went when we came back from deployment? We went into dry dock for 14 months. So I said, that's it. That's got to fit. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I said, go with it. And I'm on land. I'm a land lover now, so I'm not near the water. Yeah. I'm on land. So
that's funny. Thank you for telling me that story.
Isn't that hilarious? It just happened. I mean, seriously, it just happened. I didn't plan it.
You said you're an amateur botanist, so I have to ask you about your garden. So can you... You're growing some peas. What else are you growing in your garden this year?
Yes, snow peas, sugar snap peas. I have the seedlings going. The fall crops are going, the beets and the carrots and the snow peas. They weren't, that's ongoing. I'll continue to keep them going until the summer when it gets hot here. I've got mm-hmm. Indian corn seedlings going right now. And then there's, what else do we have? Give me a second here. I planted a whole bunch of marigold seeds because I need the marigolds around all the squash, cucumber, pumpkin seedlings because they keep the aphids away. Mm-hmm. And I've got like 5 different gourd varieties going and probably 5 different pumpkin. Nothing big, but they're all real small. But I've got so many seedlings and I've got raised beds that I've been making out of old pallets. Mm-hmm. So they're about 2.5, some of them 3 feet off the ground. We have a Australian Shepherd Golden Retriever mix puppy, and she's just over a year old, and she gets into everything. So I've got to put fences around the raised beds, but I've got raised beds in various parts of the yard. I've got sunflowers. I got mammoth sunflower seedlings going. I've got 2 different types of cucumber seedlings going. And when I say seedlings, I mean like 30 of each. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the gourds of pumpkins, I've got probably more than that. I got a lot of things going on out there. I want to keep things growing year round. And it's more for enjoyment. I mean, we get some beets and peas out of it. We'll get peas out of it. I don't know about the beets, but it's just, I just go out there and I'm out there tinkering around, you know, but I'm trying different things, seeing what I can grow. If it doesn't work out, I just go to, you know, just keep trying other things.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for talking with me and then also for everything that you are doing for the colorectal cancer community, the ostomy community, the FAP community. You know, I don't think I want you to be a part of any more rare disease communities. I think you're doing enough. You don't need to add anything else to it. But thank you so much. And last thing is I want everyone to be able to follow you. So if you can let me know about your social media and where people can find you across the interwebs.
Absolutely. Yeah. LinkedIn, I'm Dan Drydock Shockley. Instagram, I'm Dan Drydock. And Twitter, I'm Dry Shockley. So I don't know how that worked out, but I guess because my humor is so dry anyway. But that's the three I'm on. They can email me at dandrydock@gmail.com as well.
Excellent.
And there's 31 articles online about my journey. You Google my name, Dan Drydock Shockley, you know, there'll be a boatload of articles out there. I think now this would be my 16th podcast guest appearance. So add that to the list. And pretty amazing. But thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity. It's been an honor.
Thank you so much, Dan. Hey, super listener. Thanks to Dan Shockley for finding the time to talk to me about how he is managing living with AFAP and the work he's doing in the community to increase awareness. And even though I've been following him for years, it never occurred to me until he explained it that the acronym for his mantra, always forge ahead with a purpose, is AFAP, the acronym for his diagnosis. Be sure to follow Dan across social media. As always, links to a written transcript, everyone's social media handles, and more information on the topics we discussed is in the show notes and on my episode 149 page on aboutibd.com. Thanks for listening. And remember, until next time, I want you to know more about IBD. About IBD is a production of Mal and Tal Enterprises. It is written, produced, and directed by me, Amber Tresca. Mix and sound design is by Mac Cooney. Theme music is from Cooney Studio.